The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to a Friday. Welcome to it. Nicole Sandler here on the Progressive Voices Network. And of course, always at NicoleSandler.com. You know, every day there's more breaking news. And today, you know, yesterday during the show, while we were on the air, the word broke through the Wall Street Journal that Special Counsel Robert Mueller had convened or started using a second grand jury, this one in Washington, D.C. And that was great news. And that led the newscasts, you know, throughout the night, last night. That was the big story. But this afternoon, there's another story. And this one, well, let me just go to the New York Times to start. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced on Friday that the Justice Department was pursuing three times as many leak investigations as were open at the end of the previous administration, a significant devotion of law enforcement resources to hunt down the sources of unauthorized disclosures of information that have plagued the Trump administration. Mr. Sessions vowed that the Justice Department would not hesitate to bring criminal charges against people who had leaked classified information. He also announced that the FBI had created a new counterintelligence unit to manage these cases. So there was a little press conference this afternoon, and here's some of the beginning of it.
First, let me say that I strongly agree with the president and condemn in the strongest terms
the staggering number of leaks undermining the ability of our government to protect this country. Just yesterday, we saw reports in the media about conversations the president had with foreign leaders.
Yes, we did.
No one is entitled to surreptitiously fight to advance battles in the media by revealing sensitive government information. No government can be effective when its leaders cannot discuss sensitive matters in confidence or talk freely in confidence with foreign leaders. We're here today to talk about the dramatic growth in the number of unauthorized disclosures of classified national security information in the past several months. This includes leaks to both the media and, in some cases, even unauthorized disclosures to our foreign adversaries.
Yeah, from Trump
Referrals
himself.
Referrals for investigations of classified leaks to the Department of Justice from our intelligence agencies have exploded. In the first 6 months of this administration, the Department of Justice has already received nearly as many criminal referrals involving unauthorized disclosures of classified information as we received in the previous 3 years combined.
Yeah, wonder why that is.
Classified information, by definition, is information that, if disclosed, would do harm to national security. As Director Coates will discuss, leaks are incredibly damaging to our intelligence mission and capabilities. Simply put, these leaks hurt our country. All of us in government can do better. The first requirement is for discipline within all our agencies of the government. To prevent these leaks, every agency and Congress has to do better.
So there's a little bit of Jeff Sessions this afternoon. Oh, there's more. Don't worry. We're going to get to more. But the question is, really? I mean, if there's been more investigations into leaks in the first 6 months of this administration than there was in the last 3 years. And remember, Barack Obama was really tough on whistleblowers. He prosecuted more whistleblowers, so-called leakers, under the Espionage Act than all previous administrations put together. And there's been an explosion under the Trump administration. You wonder why? Well, it's because there are people, obviously, in the White House, in those inner circles, who are so mortified by what they see going on that they feel like they need to save the country. I adore Maxine Waters. She was on The View this morning, and listen to this little exchange.
I want to talk to you about these leaks that have been coming out. It seems a steady stream of leaks have been coming out of the White House and intelligence agencies. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, was just he just delivered a briefing today about cracking down on this. But we have to be bothered by these phone conversations, these confidential conversations that he had with Mexico and Australia that were just illegally leaked to the Washington Post. There's a lot of Democrats that are disturbed by this because it threatens our national security. Are you disturbed by it?
No, not at all. I am so glad they're telling us what's going on. And
we don't need to hear these conversations. They're confidential. This threatens national security.
I need to hear these conversations. I need to hear...
Thank you, Maxine.
This is his problem. He is in a White House where he's got people working for him that don't believe in him, don't like what he's doing, and they're trying to tell the American public
they're
something.
Whistleblowers.
But this
they're not
this leakers. America loses here, though. He cannot have a candid conversation with the leader of another country. Mexico's not going to want to have a conversation with us anymore because it could get leaked. Australia, countries are not going
to
want to get on the phone with the leader of the free world.
No, let me tell you something. Mexico is glad to have it leaked.
Yep.
And I tell you why he tried to convince the president that somehow he should not be talking about the fact that they're not going to fund this wall. And he's trying to convince him to go along with him to do harm to his country.
And isn't it good that his supporters hear that? They've been believing all the lies about building the wall. Now they know he's was lying.
And they know that the American taxpayer is going to pay for it.
If this leak can happen for this president, that means that it can happen for any president. Yeah. And other countries will look at us and say, you know what, the United States of America as a whole is not a secure place where we can handle Obama.
No,
you have people from Obama's administration coming out and saying, I would go crazy if this were happening.
No,
but
very dangerous. Let me tell you, the leadership starts at the top. Mm-hmm. And it is this president. It is this president that his own people have no confidence in. They're undermining him because they want to see him stop. They want us to do something. Not every president. would be treated this way.
But you're
this man has no values. He lies. They know it. And he's the danger. And they want us to do something
about
it.
I hear you, but it's
you
a
go,
scary
Maxine Waters.
To try to undermine the president because you don't like his policy, you don't trust him, and risk undermining the entire country in the process.
No, I don't see it that
way. He's undermining the country.
He is undermining the country. And frankly, look, we spent a lot of time yesterday on the conversation between Trump and Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico. Just hearing the way this man, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, speaks to other leaders, I think is important for us to know. I don't know that it makes us feel any better. I think it makes us feel a lot worse. But wouldn't you rather know who he is, what he's saying to other world leaders? Because everything we get out of this man is a lie. Anyway, it went further today with Jeff Sessions on this crackdown against leakers. He stuck his finger out and pointed squarely at the press and said, watch out, because you guys are next.
One of the things we are doing is reviewing policies for affecting media subpoenas. We respect the important role that the press plays, and we'll give them respect.
Sure you will.
But it is not unlimited. They cannot place lives at risk with impunity. We must balance the press's role with protecting our national security and the lives of those who serve in the intelligence community, the armed forces, and all law-abiding Americans. Finally, here's what I want to tell every American today.
Yeah.
This nation must end this culture of leaks. We will investigate and seek to bring criminals to justice. We will not allow rogue anonymous sources with security clearances to sell out our country. These cases, to investigate and prosecute, are never easy. But cases will be made, and leakers will be held accountable. All of us in government and in every agency in Congress and Congress must do better. The first requirement is personal discipline. Education and repetition within our departments and agencies will make a difference. Prevention is what is required. An investigation of a leak is too late, really. The damage is done.
So was there damage done by these phone calls being released? There was damage done to Donald Trump because people see what a buffoon he is. But to the national security, I give, for instance, these transcripts were given to the Washington Post. And I believe they used journalistic responsibility in what they released. They didn't release anything that was of danger to national security. If there was something in there, I hope they pulled it out. They redacted it. There's no way to really know that because there's no evidence of redaction in it. But all we saw was a buffoonish, megalomaniacal leader, wannabe leader, trying to threaten and bully the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Australia. So my question to you is this a vendetta? Is a vendetta against the press? Would you rather have the leaks and know what's going on? Or do you think, you know, like the woman on The View said, it is a measure of national security, then the leaks need to stop? We have somebody holding, the phone number is 954-889-6410. You can Skype in. I'm just Nicole Sandler, all one word on Skype. Somebody's been holding from the 805 area code since right when we came on the air. I don't know, who's this?
This is Jason from Simi Valley, Nicole.
Hey, Jason from Simi Valley.
How are you today?
I'm doing okay.
Okay. One thing you might want to, when you go to break, check. You're not, as far as I can tell, I cannot hear you on the Progressive Voices app.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, just thought I'd mention it. That was the reason I was calling. But since you want to talk about the evil Keebler elf,
yes,
who I would pay good money to see the Lucky Charms leprechaun beat the crap out of him, there's an interesting visual. But the point basically being is leaks in Washington have been going on for God knows how long. They're going to try and do this, but the problem is, to take a quote from Star Wars, the tighter you clench your fists, the more leakers will slip through your fingers.
Right.
This is the point. They're never going to stop leaks. Leaks are done from anything, and I suspect some of the leaks in question are coming from Pence's office. What are they going to do? Fire Pence? They can't, because Pence obviously wants the big office. So this is going to go on. It may ebb and flow a little bit. What are they going to do? He's going to throw a reporter in jail. What do you do when you throw a reporter in jail who's protecting your source? What do you create? A martyr.
Yes, you do.
And that is exactly what's going to go on here. They're just upset because the leaks they're getting, like this transcript. Why didn't they just release a transcript, as other presidents, I believe, did, of these sorts of conversations? They didn't. They've been trying to hide the fact that this guy is a blithering idiot. And, I mean, this is their whole secrecy. Everything that's getting leaked is about stuff that the American people, I believe, should know about.
Right. I agree with Maxine Waters. This is stuff I think we need to know. Now, normally, a transcript of a phone call between the President of the United States and another world leader wouldn't be released. But Donald Trump is not your normal president.
Well, we're also presuming that it wasn't a transcript that came to the Washington Post from the foreign government.
Right.
And also, the other thing, when they start going on just on security issues about grand juries and all that, when you're on a grand jury, you can't say anything. If you're a prosecutor, you can't say anything. But if you've been called to testify, you are not obliged to keep it secret. You are not. So if somebody goes before them and they're asking questions, some reporter says, what did you talk to the grand jury about? They're free to say, yeah, I talked about this and this and this.
Right. So if someone goes before the grand jury, you said?
Yeah, exactly. If you're called to testify, you can say, they asked me about this and this and this. And there are reporters all over this. Believe me, contrary to popular belief, keeping a secret in Washington, you have a better chance at hitting the slots in Vegas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
But I also think what's very interesting is I read something this morning about leaks and such that Jared and Ivanka or whatever going back to New York and all that. That man is quickly losing his people around him and only are left with the nut jobs. And by the way, I did want to make an observation for you on people complaining about leaks and such. The other day we had the wonderful Stephen Miller.
Oh, God. What? Now, there was something wrong with that man.
Well, let me ask you something. How old would you say he is?
I'd say
just a wild guess.
He looks about 32.
You looked it up.
That guy was 32.
He is going to. He's only 31. He's turning 32 at the end of
the month. Oh, my God.
What life-sucking evil things has he done to make himself look that much older at this point in his life? I mean, come on.
See, I think he looks like a twerp, like a smarmy, sleazy twerp. I don't think he looks very old. I think he looks like a kid who's in way over his head.
Did you ever see SpongeBob SquarePants?
Did I see it?
Have you ever seen it?
Oh, sure.
Think about that octopus thing.
The octopus thing.
Think of this guy. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
But look, Nicole, I want you to have a very good weekend, and thank you for the show and all that. Have a good time, and take care of yourself.
Well, thank you so much, Jason. It's always good to hear from you. I put the word out to Progressive Voices. Hopefully, they can fix it, and I rebooted my... I have a little box. Thanks, Jason. I have a box here on my end that my sound goes out through, and when 3 Eastern rolls around, it's supposed to just switch over and pull in my signal. They do such great technological feats of strength with pulling signals from all different places on Progressive Voices. So I don't know what happened today. I really have no control over it from this end, but I did text George, the tech genius, and let him know there was a problem there. But, you know, you can always listen at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. That's our Listen Live page on the website. There's a URL directly to my own stream, my own tune-in channel, which is NicoleSandlerShow.com. So if you just quickly want to bring in the audio, you can get it there. But yeah, hopefully Progressive Voices will get up and running again. Yes, Trumantown reminds us in the NicoleSandler.com chat room that Stephen Miller came from Jeff Sessions' Senate staff. You know, yesterday I was saying we talked a lot about the leak, the conversation between Peña Nieto, the Mexican president, and Trump. Last night, Lawrence O'Donnell did a great rundown of the other phone call, of what went on in the other phone call with Malcolm Turnbull. the Australian Prime Minister. And in case you didn't read the transcripts, I'll let Lawrence tell you what went down in that phone call. The thing that is apparent from both of these is how embarrassing of a president Donald Trump is. He has no grasp on foreign affairs, of world issues, of even what he was talking to these people about. And apparently, allegedly, he was briefed on what this phone call with Malcolm Turnbull was going to be about by Jared Kushner, of all people, because, you know, Jared is the keeper of all things. Anyway, here's Lawrence's explanation of what went on during that phone call, and brace yourself.
As expected, he does his job with relentless incompetence, fleeting comprehension of what is being discussed, which leaves him in never-ending fear of looking weak, looking like a dope, as he told Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia. Prime Minister Turnbull had told Jared Kushner what he was going to talk about before his phone call with President Trump. So there is no excuse for Trump's failure to understand so much of what Turnbull had to say. Before Donald Trump was inaugurated, the Australian government had reached an agreement with the American government that the United States would accept refugees who were then being held on two islands off of Australia. President Trump's reaction to that was, boy, that will make us look awfully bad. Here I am calling for a ban where I am not letting anybody in, and we take 2,000 people. Really, it looks like 2,000 people that Australia does not want. Turnbull repeatedly pointed out to the president that the agreement was for 1,250 people, not 2,000. And then Amazing. Turnbull said this: every individual is subject to your vetting. You can decide to take them or to not take them after vetting. You can decide to take 1,000 or 100. It is entirely up to you. The obligation is to only go through the process. Donald Trump could not understand why Australia wouldn't take these refugees themselves. Turnbull repeatedly explained that Australia cannot accept refugees who arrive by boat, because that only encourages massive human trafficking in the region and extremely dangerous attempts to reach Australia by boat. And so Australia needs the world around them to know that you will never be allowed in if you arrive by boat. Turnbull had to explain that to Donald Trump over and over again. Australia, in turn, had to agree in their agreement with the Obama administration to take in some refugees that the United States didn't want to accept here. Donald Trump said, this is going to kill me. I am the world's greatest person that does not want Amazing. To let people into the country. And now I am agreeing to take 2,000 people. And I agree, I can vet them, but that puts me in a bad position. It makes me look so bad. I hate taking these people. I guarantee you they are bad. That is why they are in prison right now. They are not going to be wonderful people who go on to work for the local milk people. For all other English speakers, local milk people are dairy farmers or dairies. And the refugees were not in prison. Prime Minister Turnbull repeatedly explained that. And he said, I think this will make you look like a man who stands by the commitments of the United States. It shows that you are committed. And President Trump cut him off before he could finish that sentence and said, okay, this shows me to be a dope.
Well, you are a dope. You're more than a dope. You're a fucking dolt. You're a moron with an orange face, and your face has nothing to do with it, but you do not belong in the highest office in the land. Donald Trump should just admit that this is not the life for him. He wants to go back to playing golf. By the way, that's what he's going to do for the next 17 days. He's taking a working vacation. He'll be for 17 days at his golf property in New Jersey. By the way, I need to reference something that our friend Jason said in the phone call, that he heard that Jared and Ivanka were moving back to New York. That's not a done deal. That's not, I don't even think, even a possibility. It's been a suggestion. Somebody in the YouTube chat room said it was an op-ed from Joe Scarborough. Actually, I have a better editorial that I don't really have time to read right now, but it's from Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. I never really knew her because, frankly, I don't read a lot of conservative blogs, but I've become a real fan of hers because she is a real conservative, not a Republican. I mean, she may be a Republican for all I know, but she has been very honest and really tough on Trump. And she wrote this editorial that's in the paper today. How can Kelly tell Trump the truth when his entire presidency is built on lies? And she makes a whole bunch of suggestions of things that John Kelly, the new chief of staff, should say to Donald Trump. And one of them is, Your son-in-law and daughter are unqualified to be senior advisors. Jared has made some really bad recommendations, like hiring Anthony Scaramucci and firing Comey. They should go back to New York. Honestly, you'd be doing them a favor. You know what? I think I will read this to you. And instead of What's News, we'll just play What's News at the end of the show before Randy Rhodes. I don't even know if we're on Progressive Voices. So here's what Jennifer Rubin wrote. Former White House Chief of Staff, CIA Director, and Defense Attorney Leon Panetta gives some solid advice to the new Chief of Staff, John F. Kelly, including this. There has to be one person in the White House willing to look the president in the eye and tell him the truth, to tell him when he is wrong and when he is about to make a mistake. And that has to be the chief of staff. Staff members, by their nature, are hesitant to challenge the president for fear of offending him. But it is a disservice to the president and the nation not to make him aware of the political and substantive problems he may confront as the result of a particular decision. No president likes to be told he is wrong. However, to be successful, all presidents have to accept the reality that they are not always right. Panetta's advice is sound, but it got me thinking about what kind of truths Kelly would need to tell President Trump, and she writes a whole list of them. Here they go. 1. There was no massive voting fraud in 2016. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by about 3 million votes. I need some kind of a boom. I could do a... None of the health care plans put forth by Republicans that you endorsed cover, quote, everybody. They all resulted in millions fewer insured people. The House bill for which you threw a celebratory Rose Garden gathering cut Medicaid substantially. You promised you wouldn't do that in the campaign. The Russia investigation is not fake news or a hoax. Contrary to your representations, the campaign had multiple contacts with the Russians. Michael Flynn, Jeff Sessions, and Jared Kushner all made representations that were not true concerning contacts with Russian officials. The next one. You involved yourself in creating a fake cover story for the June 2016 meeting with Jared Kushner, Donald Trump Jr., and Paul Manafort. Combined with the firing of James Comey, the special prosecutor may have a case for obstruction of justice. The next one, if you fire Robert Mueller, it is quite possible Congress will move to impeach you. Russia did interfere with our election and is engaged in widespread cyber attacks and misinformation campaigns against the West. These are facts. Denying them makes you seem like a Russian pawn or crazy. Congress is not responsible for the state of relations with Russia. Russia is. Again, if you're just tuning in, this is Jennifer Rubin, a conservative columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the Right Turn blog for The Post, and this is her list of things that that John Kelly should tell Donald Trump. Next, your approval is really, really low, and you are losing some of your core base, including whites with no college degree. As a result of that and failure of health care reform, Republicans in Congress now ignore you. They will be more likely to send legislation you don't like, and to insist on vigorous investigation of the Russia scandal. The majority of Americans really want you to stop tweeting. You sound uninformed and unhinged in many of these missives. You've diminished the office of the presidency. Then she continues, what I read before about Jared and Ivanka, they're unqualified to be senior advisors. They should go back to New York. Honestly, you'd be doing them a favor. Next, we talked about him before. Stephen Miller is awful on TV. He came across as a bully and someone who does not like immigrants, which may be candid, but is nevertheless unacceptable to most Americans, as it should be. That's my aside. He should not go on TV again. Then she continues, you ran as a populist, but your agenda on taxes is tilted toward the very rich. You will allow Democrats to take back their white working class voters if you keep governing like a pro-billionaire right winger. Please, pretty please. You should not have so many Goldman Sachs billionaires in the cabinet. Rich people are not necessarily smart or good at governing. She's making a lot of sense here. The State Department is a hot mess. You need a new Secretary of State. And let me add, you need a staff. You need more than a Secretary of State and a Deputy Secretary of State. You need a full staff. There's a big world out there that needs diplomacy, and ours is a ghost town. Next. Trade protectionism is bad for America. NAFTA did not cause us to lose millions of jobs. I might disagree with that one. We need immigrants for economic growth. The Cotton-Purdue bill, according to more than 1,000 economists, would be a disaster. And let me add on this one, what the hell is he doing? This is not anything that his Republican Congress wants. This is something that came out of left field and is furthering, further alienating the Republican Congress from their Republican president. So keep it up. The next one, a wall on the southern border is an expensive, unnecessary boondoggle. And she finishes by saying, you see, without the lies, there would be virtually nothing for Trump to say and nothing left of his presidency. If Kelly ever decided to level with Trump, he'd need to tell the president that his behavior is unbecoming and that his, quote, ideas are daft. And that's the problem. There's no way to tell this president the truth and remain in the administration. And that is, again, Jennifer Rubin's column. She's been on MSNBC a lot lately. And the more I see her, the more I really like her, even if she is a conservative. See, not all conservatives are bad people. It's the idiotic ones. It's the ones without a brain that are bad. Smart people I like. Smart people we can come to terms and we can even, oh my God, compromise with. It's the idiot, brainless ones who put party over country that are the problem. People like Donald Trump. You know what? We will do What's News. We'll come back on the other side with Gaius Publius. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler. We'll be right back. I read the news
today. Oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Thursday's big breaking news story came from the Wall Street Journal, reporting that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington, D.C. to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 elections.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Mueller has now impaneled a grand jury in Washington, D.C., in a sign that his inquiry is growing in intensity and entering a new phase. Before Mueller took over the investigation in May, federal prosecutors had been using a grand jury in Alexandria, Virginia, which law enforcement officials told NBC News was focused on two men, Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign chairman, and Michael Flynn, the president's former national security advisor, both of whom are key figures in the investigation. The apparent move to D.C. suggests the probe may well be expanding, law professor Stephen Vladek characterizing it this way, a sign there is a long-term, large-scale series of prosecutions being contemplated and being pursued by the special counsel.
Mueller is also investigating whether Trump's campaign or associates colluded with Russia as part of its efforts to influence the election. Trump has disputed allegations of collusion and called Mueller's inquiry a witch hunt. In a campaign rally Thursday night in West Virginia, Trump again dismissed the Russia story.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is. Most people know there were no Russians in our campaign. There never were. We didn't win because of Russia. We won because of you. That I can tell you.
And he again called for prosecutors to probe his general election rival, Hillary Clinton, prompting the crowd to chant, lock her up.
What the prosecutors should be looking at are Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails.
The Senate left D.C. for their August recess on Thursday night, but not before taking action to ensure that the president cannot make a recess appointment to replace Jeff Sessions as attorney general, a move he was reportedly considering as a way to oust special counsel Robert Mueller. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, doing wrap-up for the Senate, locked in 9 pro forma sessions, brief meetings that normally last about a minute. The move, which requires the agreement of every senator, means the Senate will be in session every 3 business days throughout the August recess. Most lawmakers aren't expected back in D.C. until after Labor Day. Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Democrat Chris Coons of Delaware introduced legislation Thursday making it harder for Trump to fire Mueller. Under the bill, a special counsel could challenge his or her removal with a 3-judge panel ruling within 14 days on whether the firing was justified. If the panel found no good cause, the special counsel would immediately be reinstated. Republican Lindsey Graham and Democrat Cory Booker also introduced their own legislation. Senator Chris Coons explains.
Part of why we didn't go into recess, just open recess, we're going to have these pro forma sessions every 3 days during the month of August so that the president can't make a recess appointment. That was partly to prevent the president from abruptly firing Jeff Sessions and replacing him with someone who might fire Bob Mueller.
So your bill is strengthened by the fact that it is bipartisan with Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina. Also, you mentioned Senators Lindsey Graham and Cory Booker, again, a Republican and Democrat working together. Why the two separate bills? Have you considered putting them together?
We have. I actually spoke with the other three senators about that on the floor yesterday. The bill that Senator Booker and Senator Graham put in has a what I'd call a front-end protection. Before the special counsel can be fired, there has to be a review by a three-judge panel of whether or not the firing's appropriate. And then the bill that Senator Tillis and I put in has a back-end review, where if the special counsel has been fired and a Democrat over the course of the break, and that will come back early in September to craft a bill that's going to have broad bipartisan support.
In a final burst of action on Thursday, the Senate overwhelmingly approved an FDA funding bill and agreed to more than 60 Trump administration nominees, more executive branch nominations in a single day than the Senate had approved all year to date. But when they return in September, two must-do items will dominate the agenda: increasing the government's debt limit to prevent a catastrophic default on U.S. spending obligations like interest payments and Social Security checks, and passing a temporary spending bill to keep government agencies up and running. The White House and congressional Republicans are also promising action this fall to change the tax code and lower rates for both corporations and individuals. The Washington Post is reporting that the Secret Service has vacated its command post inside Trump Tower in Manhattan following a dispute between the government and the president's company over the lease terms for the space. They've relocated from the unit one floor below Trump's apartment to a trailer on the sidewalk some 50 floors below. As Congress heads out for its August recess, so does the president. He begins a 17-day vacation at his private golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey. The Washington Post has kept track of his time off and on the links. They report by the end of this vacation, Trump will have taken 53 days at leisure. Compare that with Obama's 15 vacation days at the end of August during his own first term as president. Trump has to date almost doubled the former president's trips to the links. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Doesn't cost you an extra dime, and yes, we get a small commission, so please do, if you shop Amazon, use the link at NicoleSandler.com. Thank you.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Gaius Publius.
Wow! Another winner!
Joins Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Hi, yes, Gaius Publius. Hello and happy Friday to you.
Thank you. Same to you. You know, that intro makes me smile every time.
And that's the point of it. It makes me smile, too. So even when you're, you know, you're frustrated as hell, as many of us have been lately, at least there's a small glimmer of fun in there somewhere. So good.
And I'd rather be called into question than called into court.
And it looks like, do you believe this thing with Sessions? They're going to start subpoenaing journalists on leaks.
Say that again?
Jeff Sessions held a press conference today. They're going to start subpoenaing journalists about leaks.
That I hadn't heard. That's amazing.
It's amazing. They're declaring war on the Fourth Estate and the First Amendment.
Wow.
Yep. Another day in the good old USA.
Well, I always thought that Sessions would start a rolling civil war in this country by himself, and he's not the only one doing it.
Right. Well,
wait till he cracks down on marijuana.
Oh, God.
Well, these are the marching orders from Trump, you know, especially after the transcripts of those phone calls were released. They've got fire smoke coming out of their ears and they're pissed. And I think a question of I think we deserve to know who is the guy, you know, masquerading as a president, talking to world leaders in our name from the White House. It's frightening.
You know, I'm in favor of all leaks except for one set. And we've had that one set among the leaks that have come about in this Trump-Russia investigation. Leaks from serving national security, FBI, CIA, NSA, and military. People who are serving, especially in the spy establishment, really ought to be unallowed. And the reason is that leaking from those establishments is a political act.
Right. Right.
If I'm an administration official leaking about a meeting that I heard, that's a political act too, but I'm fine with that. But if you start, let me put it bluntly, if you start leaking from the Praetorian Guard as a way to unseat the emperor,
right?
I don't care who the emperor is. I don't want a Praetorian Guard.
Right. No, I agree with you. These were, I think, as something like that goes, relatively harmless. What they did is they pulled back the curtain behind the guy behind the curtain, you know, so we see who the wizard is, and he's exactly what we thought he was. He's a buffoon. He is a complete and utter moron who doesn't have a clue, and he gets by bullying people. That's his negotiating deal, prowess, is to bully people and say, you can't talk to the press. You can't, we know that you're not going to pay for the wall. It'll all work out in the wash. We'll figure something out, but don't ever tell the press that you won't pay for it. This is the guy.
Well, you know, Trump has an absolute firewall. I don't know if he realizes it, but the people around him certainly do. As long as his polling numbers are high among Republicans and conservatives, that's all he cares about, because those are the people that will reelect Republicans in Congress, in the House, and the House is his firewall against impeachment. It's pretty absolute. So, I think he doesn't realize it, but I'm certain that Kelly realizes it, Bannon realizes it, and we're going to be stuck with Trump unless Mueller pulls something out of the hat that unseats him.
Right, and what the Senate did on their way out last night is pretty big. The fact that they're keeping the Senate in pro forma session throughout this month of August is huge. It's keeping him from, you know, firing Sessions and making a recess appointment with someone who could fire Mueller. It's probably for Trump's own protection that some of them did it. But I think more and more, as his numbers fall, there was a new Quinnipiac poll out yesterday, and he's down to 33%. Even his base is starting to erode a little bit, and it's only been 6 months. I think a lot of these senators are not going to be willing to fall on their swords for him.
I would check that poll. Down to 33%, he's losing ground among independents and Democrats,
right.
Independents very quickly.
And white, non-college educated people, too. So that's a big part of his base.
Well, that will be a significant break in the ice if that occurs. You're
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. So, Gaius Publius, you live in the Pacific Northwest. What's the temperature like there?
Well, it's persistently hot. We're experiencing Florida without the humidity. We're up in the 90s. We've been up as high as, it was forecast for 107 on the
Whoa.
Highest day this week. I don't know if it got that far. But this is bloody Oregon, for God's sake. So if people don't think the climate change is real, in fact, I think that people do think that climate change is real, which is part of my point. It's pretty obvious, and it's even worse. I wrote a story about what's going on in the Dakotas, and
that's up
Montana.
At downwithtyranny.com. Your pieces run at Down with Tyranny every Thursday, so I'll make sure
Monday and Thursday.
So I'll make sure I put up a link on the blog to it. But yeah, it's what's going on in your neck of the woods in the Dakotas is frightening. And again, just to bring it back to Trump for a moment, he's rolling back all the protections, anything that was in place under the Obama administration, and having in mitigating or at least trying to mitigate the effects of climate change are gone.
Well, I'm going to try to stay away from the, oh my God, Trump narrative, if you don't mind,
please.
Because frankly, under Clinton, none of this would be rolled back either. We just have, you know, half measures and quarter measures.
Right, I agree. Yep.
So I don't want to jump on the Trump train here.
Okay.
I want to jump on the climate train.
Okay, please. So tell us what's happening.
So, well, what's happening first is the overall story, of which there are two pieces so far. The overall story is the crisis has started. We are in the first stages of the actual climate crisis. We're not looking at it as something in the future. It's happening now. The biggest piece, the one that everybody knows about, is that there's this huge refugee crisis in Europe that is destabilizing Europe both politically and economically. We've been watching that for a couple of years. If you look at the piece, I won't detail the dots that get connected, but if you look at the piece I wrote it down with Tyranny yesterday, it's really easy to trace the Syrian civil war back to a historical long drought in Syria that stripped all the farmers of their assets and forced them into the cities in poverty. You can trace those connections by looking at that post-it down with Tyranny. I kind of drew the dots rather quickly. But the fact is that even though most people think of the climate crisis as being, well, we're going to have our physical systems disrupted and then our political, social, and economic systems will be disrupted afterwards, that's not actually always the case, because humans can anticipate, unlike animals. Who maybe anticipate, if you raise your hand, a dog who's been struck will jerk, jump back. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to think from 18 days ago this happened. Well, people anticipate. So when they see something about to happen that they're very frightened of, they will panic in response. Humans are panicking in response. And we're seeing in Europe a political response to a climate crisis physical problem that hasn't hit Europe yet but will. Now, what's going on in the Dakotas, an area of the U.S. called the High Plains? If anybody remembers High Plains Drifter which was a wonderful film, you get a sense of what that land is like. It's very high but flat and plateau, elevated area in Wyoming, the Dakotas, and in Montana. That area, eastern Montana and the Dakotas, have taken over wheat production from Kansas, which is to say there's more wheat grown in the United States in those areas than there is now in Kansas. That crop is moving north. I've got a fantasy about what happens when that crop moves north into Canada, but we can save that one for later.
Okay.
There was what they called a flash drought. Think of a flash flood. All of a sudden, oh my God, and those things are happening in Arizona. This was a flash drought that neither the farmers nor all of the weather services that farmers depend upon. So this is not just a bunch of grizzly old guys looking at the wind and saying, huh, it's going to be okay. This is all the sophisticated weather forecasters and their backups in an area that's important. It's an important farming region. The temperatures in a group of days and the dryness in a group of days, a very quick group of days, has covered basically most of the two states of the Dakotas and eastern Montana. As a result, one half of the wheat crop in that area, the entire harvest, is at risk of destruction. Now, because wheat has grown so prominent in that area, that wheat crop is not only feeding the United States, it's an export product out of the High Plains.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a physical crisis going on in the Dakotas and in the High Plains. And it's a forecast of things to come. And I think, circling back to the main idea, people get it, that this is just a taste of what's to come.
Wow. It's frightening. And I guess you're right. It doesn't matter who's in charge. This has begun. We've long passed the 350 parts of carbon per million?
Parts per million.
Parts per million in the atmosphere. And that was supposedly, you know, the point of no return. So we're beyond that. And it seems like exponentially getting worse with each passing year. You write that the last three years have been the three hottest years on record.
In recorded history, yes. Since what the technical phrase is, since the instrument record, which means since people started sticking thermometers out the window and writing things down. Mm-hmm. That goes back to the 1800s, the instrument records. At least in some parts of the world, obviously.
Right. Well, I know, you know, here in Florida, we looked, the electric bill for that just came in was almost $100 more than the month before. We didn't change anything, but the month of July is the hottest month ever on record down here in South Florida. So it keeps going. It just keeps getting hotter and hotter. With the rains, we have more and more flooding. And in each part of the country, you're seeing different, you know, what used to be called 100-year events that are happening with regularity now.
Right, right. In fact, there's a couple of ways you can statistically analyze this to show, at least to a scientist, that this is obviously coming. And that's one of them. It's called... how many standard deviations are you away from the norm? And when you get an event that is three standard deviations away from the norm occurring as normal, you know that that bell-shaped curve is moving toward the more extreme events. And that's not, by definition, that's statistically significant. But I think just in commonplace, people get it. I happen to follow a football team that lost its storied coach just in the last couple of days, Eric Parsegian.
Right.
That football team has joined, for purposes of football, a contract to play the Atlantic Coast Conference. The Atlantic Coast Conference is centered in North Carolina, South Carolina, areas like that. So as a result, this team has traveled into North Carolina and South Carolina in October to play football teams in those regions. And for 2 years running, our team has played in a monsoon. They played Clemson in a monsoon in 2015. People could watch it on television. Game was delayed. They played North Carolina in a monsoon in 2016. Game was delayed. Football fans who watch these games, Clemson and that area of the country has a bunch of popular, well-watched football teams. Clemson is national champion this year. People are watching these things, and it's game delay. I mean, you got 45 minutes game delay because you got a hurricane coming in, and this is going to happen every year. Ordinary people who watches these things on Fox Sports are getting this stuff. I mean, it's just getting obvious.
Right. So you end the piece by asking, is it an emergency yet? I'd say, yeah, it's an emergency. It's beyond emergency. But it's the point where, what do we do?
Yeah, well, that's... Yes, and that leads to 2 points. One is, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. It's obviously an emergency yet. What do you do in an emergency? If you click the link, you talk about here's what you do if you're going to do a World War II style mobilization, a man on the moon kind of do the most things you can do at the fastest possible rate because national security is threatened. That was what World War II was about. Mm-hmm. We went into a command economy where it wasn't the free market that decided how many tanks General Motors was going to build, and there was rationing. Well, you could solve this problem if you started tomorrow and did those things. Why can't we do it? Aside from the orange-headed man in the White House, the reason we can't do it is because it's not in the interest of anybody with a great amount of money to have that kind of mobilization and upset the standard, the economic order. So if you look at the great propaganda machine that we call commercial television, but on Big Brother was just that view screen that everybody had in their house, and it's a kinder, gentler Big Brother, that view screen is either telling us to, A, ignore this because it's not important, or B, you can do some things that will help because it'll make you feel good, but don't expect drastic change. It's better, the person who's programming all of this, would rather you feel helpless than that you feel there's something you could do, and that something would be something that would make me, the billionaire owner of GE, uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Well, we need to make those people uncomfortable, but I still don't know that it would do any good. Again,
well, we don't control the airways is what I'm saying. But there are things we can do, Nicole. There really are. It's just that we have to have control of the wheelhouse of the Titanic in order to turn the ship. We can't be communicating to some captain who doesn't want to listen.
Right, and therein lies the problem. Especially in this country. We do have a world that now seems to be taking it seriously, just not our country. And who would have ever thought we'd be in that place?
This is maybe not a bad thing, because it polarizes the world against us for the right reason. And I think that kind of polarization, I mean, at some point, you know, if the Chinese landed or the Japanese landed in California at the start of World War II instead of bombed Pearl Harbor, people wouldn't say, what's the appropriate response? Should we get tough now? Of course we get tough now. So getting tough now, the world getting tough now on climate is not, from the standpoint of the world, a bad thing.
Right.
Maybe a bad thing from the standpoint of the U.S., but this may be a good outcome.
Well, and the good news is that cities and states and municipalities are still going by the Paris Climate Accords, even if our federal government is not.
Oh, yes. And circling back to Jeff Sessions, at some point he will punish us for it, I think.
Of course he will. We were going to also talk a little bit about election hacking. We've only got like four or five minutes left. But you're not a big tell us again. You're not a real big believer in the whole Russia story, in that they were complicit in the election, in hacking the election, or you are?
Well, no. I mean, I'll try to keep this under the 4 minutes, so I'll shorthand this stuff without evidence. I'm looking at the whole iceberg and not the piece that's above water when you're looking at the Trump-Russia story. And there's a huge story going on about all kinds of people trying to unseat a sitting president with no evidence of a crime yet, looking for a crime. Now, they're going to find a crime, but it's going to be money laundering, and it's going to be willing to help Russia hack the election without any evidence of Russia actually having turned the lever that hacked the election. What is true, though, is that the election probably was hacked, and it was hacked by Republicans in the same way they tried to hack 2004. They did hack 2004 for Bush, and tried to hack 2004 for
Kerry.
For Bush and Kerry.
Right.
And tried to hack it for Romney and failed to, with Karl Rove racing into the Fox News control room screaming, how come we're getting these numbers? I didn't expect to get these numbers. So the real story about hacking is both Democrats and Republicans have been hacking voting machines since 2002, and nobody can report that story. And there's two reasons for it. One is both parties are covering up for each party's hacking crimes. Mm-hmm. And two, if the extent of the hacking were ever reported as it should be reported, it's a crisis of legitimacy for every close election in this country for the last 15 years.
Wow.
And just like the Kennedy assassination, if the CIA really did kill Kennedy, that story can't be told to this country. Without the country really having a come to Jesus moment, that would be wrenching. This story can't be told without the country having a come to Jesus moment about real election security, and not this maybe the Russians did something.
Right. Well, I don't doubt that the Russians did do something, but I think you're absolutely right about our own political parties doing it as well. I think there's all kinds of stuff going on. All the more reason we need paper ballots hand counted by human beings. But you know, you said something else about, if the CIA assassinated Kennedy. I used to have this fantasy. I really believed that when the day the president, after the inauguration, goes into the Oval Office and sits down, and they would get visited by someone from the CIA or the NSA or some other three-letter agency that we don't even know about, and they're told, now this is how things really work. I've been disabused of that in the Trump years, because I don't think anyone has done that to him. If so, he's not gotten the memo.
I actually think that Trump may be right when he says that Comey revealed the peeing on the bed memo, Moscow memo, to Trump privately as a way to warn him that says people are onto you. When I heard that portions of that memo were given by Comey to when Comey was still in office,
right,
by Comey to Trump, I thought this was a sort of a nudge, careful. Everybody in the world is taping everybody in
that's
the world.
That's right. Ooh, we're going to have to pick up on that next time, because I really think that we're onto something. And I think Trump is just too stupid to understand what it all means.
And it doesn't mean that Trump shouldn't be got rid of. It just means he should be got rid of in the right way.
You got it. Gaius Publius. Find him at downwithtyranny.com, on the Twitters at Gaius_Publius. I'll put links to the one piece we talked about, definitely on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. Thank you so much, Gaius.
A pleasure. Thanks, Nicole.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. And with that, have a wonderful weekend. We are flat out of time. Bye, everyone. See you Tuesday.
Acres home to more than 400 bird and plant species, could soon see a border wall cut through the northern side of the refuge.
DHS waives environmental laws, prepares to bulldoze wildlife refuge for Trump's border wall. Court of Appeals orders EPA to enforce methane regulations. Now Great Britain to phase out all diesel and gasoline cars. Plus,
The next buy I do is my next car, which will be an electric vehicle.
Shell Oil CEO says his next car will be electric.
Really?
Yes.
Cool. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Looking at you, two things are clear. Heaven is missing an angel.
Well, thank you, Al Gore.
And the U.S. is missing any kind of viable, responsible climate policy.
Oh. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you and I are becoming a bit of a broken record here this summer, but more record heat waves across the U.S. and now up in the Northwest.
Yes, Oregon is going to hit a record 103 degrees or so in the next couple of days. This is dangerous heat levels.
In Oregon.
Yeah, I know. And that's very dangerous because not that many people have air conditioning up there.
Yeesh, every part of the country this summer. What else you got for us today to cheer us up?
Well, some good news. A federal court has ordered Trump's Environmental Protection Agency to enforce new methane regulations.
That is good news.
I know. Ruling that a temporary delay imposed by EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt was illegal. That means drillers must now fix and repair leaks of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, while Administrator Pruitt works to roll back the regulations for a full 2 years in the meantime. That's even though the EPA admits itself that doing so will damage nearby residents' health. 16 state attorneys general sued the EPA this week after Administrator Pruitt blocked the implementation of an EPA rule reducing ground-level ozone pollution, a main ingredient in toxic smog, which is also a significant danger to public health. At this rate, Pruitt's EPA itself is a danger to public
health.
Yeah,
no kidding.
The Trump administration Department of Homeland Security announced on Tuesday that it will waive numerous major environmental laws in order to expedite construction of a section of Trump's controversial border wall near San Diego, California. DHS will use existing authority under a 2005 immigration law that exempts the agency from 37 major laws like the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Clean Water Act. Mm. In Texas, the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol confirms that it is preparing to construct a segment of the border wall through the heart of the crucial Santa Ana Bird and Wildlife Refuge. That's in part because it's already federal land and therefore is the easiest place to jumpstart construction. Refuge officials say the wall will destroy the refuge.
Well, the good thing about walls is that even if they go up, they can, and they will, eventually come down.
Good point. The Trump administration's decision to strip grizzly bears in and around Yellowstone National Park of their endangered species protections has already gone into effect on Monday. But now 9 Native American tribes, including the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, are suing in court to restore those protections under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Something the Trump administration used to pretend to care about.
Exactly. Good news, though, for endangered American wolves. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has now overturned a U.S. Fish and Wildlife decision to delist the gray wolf under the Endangered Species Act back in 2011. That removed endangered species protections for the gray wolf in 9 states, from Minnesota to Ohio.
So gray wolves are protected again.
Yes.
For now.
For now. Some more good news. Britain will phase out gas and diesel cars by 2040 to reduce toxic air pollution and cut emissions. This occurs just 2 weeks after France announced a similar phase out. The British government will also devote more than $3 billion to clean air initiatives and a national electric vehicle charging network. The government of Queensland, Australia, this week announced that it will build the world's longest electric vehicle highway to date, more than 2,000 miles long, and said that it should be complete within a year. And here in the U.S., the Los Angeles Public Transit Authority, the L.A. Metro, has announced it will replace its entire bus fleet with all-electric buses by 2030 to cut air pollution and fuel costs. That's more than 2,000 all-electric buses in 12 years, which prompted electric bus manufacturer Proterra to open a new manufacturing plant in the LA area. All of these big moves away from fossil fuels have prompted the CEO of Shell Oil, Ben Van Beurden, to tell Bloomberg News this week his next car will be electric.
The next buy I do is my next car, which will be an electric vehicle. I think the whole move to electrify the economy, electrify mobility in places like Northwest Europe, in the US, even in China, is a good thing. I mean, we need to be at a much higher degree of electric vehicle penetration.
Good for the CEO of Shell Oil.
I know.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Beep, 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 yeah!